Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, and we're keeping Zach Lowe on the line for one more minute here to give us a little more intel. Quick question, friend, before you go. Where do the Raptors stand with trade talks on Kyle Lowry and Norm Powell at this moment, now becoming the hottest question before the trade deadline?
Exactly where you stand. The Raptors are on the verge of a monumental moment in franchise history, maybe trading the greatest player in the history of the franchise, and Kyle Lowry, one of the only players that's really even semi-available that can tilt the balance of power in the NBA. I think this is going to go on maybe all the way to the wire with Philadelphia, Miami, the LA teams, I think, would love to get in, according to Woj's reporting. So we'll see, but I think both Kyle Lowry and Norman Powell, I mean, everybody wants Norman Powell. He's young, he's a wing, everybody could use him. So they're going to work the phones and see what offers come up, and they don't have to do anything. I think they're going to want to get a good, strong offer for both of those guys.
Well, it's a huge shift for a franchise that just a couple years ago was winning an NBA title, but we know Masai Ujiri always looking to be ahead of things instead of behind it. Thank you so much, Zach. We will, of course, be paying attention to your Twitter account throughout the show, and I want to welcome in, of course, our analysts in studio. This is so nice to now be able to say
we're here
in studio. Richard Jefferson, Matt Barnes.
And we're almost twins
guys
today. Almost twins.
Yeah, close. But you're dressed. See, I'm still sweatpants underneath here and Uggs. So it's completely Uggs. Just here above.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, and we won't tell everyone whether you're wearing pants or not. Coming up, guys, they say the best ability is availability. Well, James Harden has been the most available of the Nets' big three. Where does that leave him in the MVP race? We will get to that shortly. But first, the defending champion Lakers have hit a bit of a rough patch in their season. Anthony Davis, of course, hasn't played since February 14th due to a calf strain, tendinosis in his right leg. LeBron James also out indefinitely due to that high ankle sprain. And last night, boy, was their absence felt. The Pelicans scored 62 points in the paint as they beat the Lakers, who fell to 0-3 without LeBron this season.
Don't give them one, Rachel.
Not even giving them that one.
7-9
since AD last played. This is concerning because if you look at the Western Conference standings, LA is in fourth place at the moment, but only four games separate them from that seventh seeded slot the Spurs are now in. And remember, 7 through 10 seeds face each other in a play-in tournament to earn the last two playoff spots in this season. So it is so important to try to avoid falling below six because, Richard, we can say, it doesn't matter the Lakers' seeding. Once they're healthy and whole, they could match up against anyone. So what if it has to be in the first round? But if you're in that play-in situation and you have to win one to just get into the playoffs, anything can happen in a given night, right?
Anything can happen. And that's where, you know, it's exciting that they have this little play-in tournament. Mm-hmm. But I think it also gives teams an opportunity that, you know, maybe there's some teams that are 10th and they've been injured, but they're better than that. Well, obviously, we know the Lakers are better than, you know,
but how dangerous would it be for the Lakers?
It'd be so dangerous. Are you kidding me? Like, first of all, people are asking, like, if they're going to drop. Do you think the Lakers? Yes, they're going to drop. They lost four in a row when Schroeder and AD were out. So, and this is when they had, you know, the leading guy in MVP in Bron. So with both those guys out, it's just going to be, it's just hold on and hold on.
They are definitely going to slide. I can see them sliding to 6, possibly 7, but I'm not as worried. I think their focus is, obviously, picking up someone like Drummond would be huge.
Right.
But getting AD and LeBron healthy, because normally home court advantage matters, but in this pandemic, it doesn't really matter. You know, like, to me, to see the Lakers at 6 or 7 would scare 1, 2, or 3 to death. You know, so to me, their health is most important. AD worries me a little bit more than LeBron. Anytime you have that calf Achilles injury, that's scary,
yeah,
especially when you're still a young player. We know LeBron is going to come back strong. So getting these two guys strong and healthy as they can possibly be heading into the playoffs is key for the Lakers.
And look, even if it did come down to you have to win this one game
I'm
tonight.
I'm taking them over anybody.
Taking
them over anybody in a play-in game.
I get that. You know who could be in the play-in? I mean, you could have Luka and the Mavs in there. You could have Steph Curry in there. So it's not necessarily, they're
it's
playing.
It's not a gimme. Definitely not a gimme, but I'm
not betting against them.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm taking them over Luka. Yeah. I'm taking them over Steph. Like, if AD and LeBron are on the floor and able to play, I'm taking them over anybody in a play-in game.
All right, well, let's move to the favorite in the West. Oh, sorry, producer Steve is in my ear saying, show the schedule, Rachel. So here's the schedule, guys. Richard, you said it's not a question if they're going to drop. Here is who is on the docket. LeBron James out, quote, indefinitely. But the estimate from people who are familiar, experts, athletic trainers who work with these injuries all the time, and I don't know if either one of you ever had a high ankle sprain, a month is kind of one of the general consensuses. So this is what they're looking at over that month. You know, less gimmies than you would like if you're a Laker fan.
Yeah, there's not a ton of gimmies. Yeah. And really, you understand there's going to be a fall off, and that's no disrespect to who are on the Lakers teams. You look at the Brooklyn Nets, they're missing quote unquote two superstars, even though Kyrie's been in and out of the lineup, but they have a James Harden, right? They have a James Harden. And so here the Lakers are missing two superstars, two of the top 10 players in the league, and they don't have a James Harden to fall right back on, and that's really the issue.
I think, like with what Richard said, with all due respect to who's playing right now, none of those games you just showed me is a gimme without AD and LeBron. Any given night, you know, to me, they're probably going in as underdogs considering who they're playing, because all these other teams may not be higher ranked, but they have their key guys playing. So when you don't have your two best players, two top 10 players out, there's no gimmies on what we just saw as far as their schedule goes.
So you mentioned Andre Drummond just a minute ago. The Lakers don't have a ton of flexibility in terms of making a trade.
Right.
They just don't have the assets. They don't have the cap space. So they could do something before tomorrow's deadline. But in terms of a bigger impact, it is the buyout market. It is someone like Andre Drummond, if he becomes available as a buyout person. What do you think, Richard, of what he will do for them, especially in the short term when LeBron and AD are out?
Well, look, there's a lot of different ways that Drummond can get himself to the Lakers. He can say, like, no matter who you trade me for, and his agent can have that communication that I don't care if it's a second round pick, if it's a player, I'm not showing up. So teams can be hesitant, and then they'll force a buyout and get him out of there. If Drummond shows up, he does. He brings him some strength. He brings him some defense. He brings him a force. Now, are his stats and numbers elevated a little bit because he hasn't been on great teams? Yes, but ultimately he is a high level impact player, almost a better version of what Dwight Howard was for them last year.
I mean, we won't see his impact with the Lakers until AD and LeBron are healthy. He's not going to come in and change the dynamic. He, you know, he may help them win a game here or there, but we're going to see Drummond's impact most impactful once AD and LeBron are healthy.
And look, I mean, the idea that 62 points in the paint last night for the Pelicans, that's where Andre Drummond can fit in. But you're right. It's when he is with those other guys that he could really become potent for them. All right. I did want to get to the Brooklyn Nets, the favorite on the other side in the Eastern Conference. They were without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant last night in Portland. But guess who was there? James Harden. Questionable before the game with neck soreness, but showed up as he does and in a big way, dropping 25 points, 17 assists. Here is Harden on playing through minor injuries. This is what he said after the game.
And I try to find a way to just go out there and make an impact and play if I'm able to, if it's not risking anything, if that makes sense. So, and that's how I've been out the course of my career. Like throughout the regular season, I think everybody knows I love to play. Like I don't really, you know, rest. I love to hoop. I love to be out there and being there for my teammates. I feel like if I'm on the court, you know, my teammates have a better chance of winning. So that's just my mindset. Tomorrow when I wake up, you know, if I feel like I can go, I'm going to go. It's that simple.
If he feels like he can go, he's going to go. It's that simple, guys. Since Harden joined the Nets, they have the second best record in the league behind only the Jazz. So far, he's only had both KD and Kyrie in the lineup for seven games, and yet the Nets continue to win. Now, as for his neck soreness specifically, Harden listed as questionable again tonight against the Jazz on ESPN. He said last night it would just depend on how he woke up feeling, but if he was feeling well, he wants to play tonight. So, Matt, I'm so fascinated by this because when Harden was traded to Brooklyn, everyone said, okay, well, that's it. You have three high-level superstars on the team. We have seen voter behavior in past MVP right. races. And again, I want to stress this. It's not a rule. Fans of certain teams are like, I thought it was a rule that the Warriors couldn't have an MVP. There's no rule, but we've seen voter behavior in the past saying, oh, you have three superstars on your team. That's probably one too many to count anyone's individual accomplishments. Well, do they really have three superstars playing on their team right now in the regular season? Yeah. It's a regular season award.
I mean, that's an unspoken rule you spoke on, but like the last stat said, they've only played together seven times. You know, what are they, 23-7 or 23-8 with him, and he's at 25, nearly 12 assists and nearly 9 rebounds a game, and he's a throwback. You know, when RJ and I came into the league, we prided ourselves on playing 82 games a season.
Yep.
Like, sitting out, the only time I would sit out was when I got suspended.
Right. You know what I mean?
we were going to play. And James has that kind of mindset. So to me, you know, hopefully people don't hold the three stars against him and what he did in Houston. If we're talking straight facts and numbers and his impact on this team and what his numbers have been, to me, with Embiid down and LeBron down, he has to be right up there with Joker for MVP.
Matt. Is he going to win the MVP?
Probably not.
Okay. Thank you.
There could be two categories of reasons, It could be because of who else is on his team. Some voters might have an issue with that. Some voters might have an issue with, as you said, sort of the way things went in Houston, whether it's the way he forced the trade, whether it's sort of those empty calorie stats he put up at the beginning.
Once he's on the floor,
yes.
You can't fight what he does. Similar to Kyrie. Once he's on the floor, who cares what he says off the floor? Like, when these guys are on the floor, they're some of the best players we've ever seen. I know you're not saying that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just at, like, with the again, we know who the voting poll is. We have a whole treasure trove now of history on how people vote.
Agreed.
Richard, what do you think is going to be the issue that might trip up voters? And do you think that it will be as prominent if LeBron misses a whole chunk of the season and Embiid's missing a chunk of the season?
My thing is this. James Harden has been in this same conversation for the last 5 years. So we shouldn't be surprised that he's back in the conversation again this year. Yeah. No one thought there was going to be a drop-off at the beginning of the season for James Harden. So for him to be doing what we've always seen him do isn't a surprise. I think where he's going to get, you know, issues is because of the way he left Houston. That's just it. Like, let's call a spade a spade. It's not because he's got other superstars because those guys have been out. It's not because his numbers aren't his historic because they are. It's not because we're, you know, jaded by what he's doing. It's purely because of the way he left. And that's not fair. It's not necessarily right. There were some things going on wrong on both sides. So it's like, but I just don't think he's going to be rewarded for his performance. And that's unfortunate.
Well, you tried to early make me reveal who is my vote, because I'm a voter, who my front runner was. And I said,
I don't get the vote. So if anybody's mad, direct it at Rachel.
I said last week when we talked about this on the air, I said, I don't make decisions this early in the season. And the reason is because I had no idea a few weeks ago Joel Embiid was going to get hurt. I had no idea LeBron was going to get hurt. So all of that stuff changes the race. I will say, as the season develops, James Harden, to me as a voter, is making a stronger and stronger case just by doing what he is doing. And again, I look at the Clippers situation.
No player in NBA history has ever been traded and won the MVP.
That year.
That year.
It was an early season.
I'm not
pitching for anyone because I don't pitch for anyone.
Rachel,
this
if you're
going to
vote
season.
For James Harden, just say you're voting for James Harden. Just vote.
He can get hurt tomorrow, and then what? My point, though, is this, is that I look at what the Clippers happened with them last year, right? That lack of stability, guys in and out of the lineup, they never formed the kind of chemistry that could get them apparently past the second round of the playoffs. I think Brooklyn would have been in danger of that exact same problem this year. I mean, if you look at the number of, forget the big three of those guys, just the number of games KD and Kyrie have played with each other is low. And if they had gone into the playoffs with just that, trying to hold them together, I don't know how far they would make it, but James Harden's steadying influence changes the math on them.
Absolutely. And remember early in the season when KD was playing all those minutes and we kept talking, like, man, he's coming off an Achilles.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that way. And now, look, we haven't seen KD in, what, a month and 6 weeks, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Going on 2 months.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So hopefully he can come back in rhythm, healthy, and this team can contend for a title.
Yep. All right. We'll get Richard a vote maybe by the end of the season, Matt first.
No
coming
chance.
Up later in this show, what's the best fit for Kyle Lowry? You heard Zach at the top of our show talk about him possibly being on the move. We'll dig into the Raptors in a bit. All right, let's take a look at today's Difference Makers brought to you by CarMax. The Bulls and Thunder are teaming up on this one. This is really great. Take a look.
Hi, this is Thad Young from the Chicago Bulls.
Hi, this is Darius Miller from the Oklahoma City Thunder.
The Oklahoma City Thunder and Chicago Bulls have teamed up to launch a Black History Classroom Exchange program to give high school students in Chicago and Tulsa a chance to learn about two tragic events often left out of history books. Launching near the century mark for both the Chicago Race Riot of 1919 and the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, the program will tap into experts to host guided conversations and presentations to reflect on the past in an effort to empower the future.
We want them to engage, but we also want them to reflect, to begin moving towards this civic engagement.
Making real world connections and seeing, hey, the past is very similar to the present, but what can we do to really go forward and change the future, our future as a country, as a people, society?
Really great stuff there. All right, coming up, with the Celtics currently sitting in eighth place in the Eastern Conference, is it time to shake things up in Boston? And how far? The Hall of Famer Jackie Mack joining us to discuss that right here on The Jump. Stick with us. Are you expert analysis, Richard? That might have been a mistake.
My girl,
Richard, I want to say I'm glad they took your lever away because you were blowing that smoke that
way. Oh, the trade deadline.
Oh, my God, man. I might have whipped myself a couple times.
We have some things planned for tomorrow.
Was that the free agency thing or the trade deadline?
It has. Okay, I only set one of our analysts on fire. Don't know why everyone is so crazy about that. Let's welcome in Jackie McMullen, who is patiently waiting through all of this, joining us now, Hall of Famer. Thank you for being with us. Jackie, the Boston Celtics, they have been in a funk. They've spent the last month and a half hovering around 500. Recent bad losses to the Cavs, to the Kings. Now, we know Danny Ainge is going to be attached to almost every trade rumor out there. But, Jackie, how should the Celtics shake things up at the deadline? Because Brian Windhorst was on the show yesterday and says he believes that Marcus Smart would be available in an Aaron Gordon trade, which, of course, has gotten a lot of Celtics faithful very concerned.
Right. So, listen, the Celtics have to do something. And as you know, in-season trades for Danny Ainge, not the norm. The last big one he made was 2015 when he brought Isaiah Thomas over. This team has to do something. There's a malaise over this team. They're one of the worst fourth quarter teams in basketball. And also, more importantly to me, there's a restlessness about this team. You've got two young stars that are saying, hey, man, I need some help. So you've got to get them help. I don't know about the Marcus Smart part. I respect Brian's reporting very much. What my intel tells me is they would prefer to use draft picks and a draft pick and a young player to get Aaron Gordon free. Of course, they don't want to trade Marcus Smart because he's often been called the heartbeat of that team, and I think that's an accurate description in many ways. What I'm interested to see is, do they try to expand that trade and have it Aaron Gordon and Evan Fournier, who's on an expiring contract? They need shooting. They need a big defensive wing that can guard out there on the perimeter, things they have not had since Gordon Hayward left last summer. So I'll be absolutely shocked if they don't do anything. This is not one of those times. Here's the difference, though. Usually Danny Ainge has a treasure trove of draft picks. Not this time, Rachel. As you know, they have their own picks and some protected second round picks, but they don't have the abundance of first round picks that they've had in the past. And yet they've got to do something to shake up this team because this team is drowning.
Yeah, it's tough because you expect guys like Jaylen Brown, like you said, you want an Aaron Gordon to help with the bigger defense. But, you know, that's what, you know, Jaylen Brown was turning to. I'm not saying that he's turning to more of an offensive focus, but, you know, his offensive numbers have been through the roof. He was an all-star this year. You know, not having that versatility down the line, not having Gordon Hayward, you know, people don't understand the value that he brought to the game. But I just think, I don't know, when you know, there was John Collins, there's Biggs, there's people that they're talking about, but Marcus Smart, it's hard to find players. You can fill a need, you can fill a big, you can fill shooting, but how often do you find, like, we got to find some heart and toughness? And that's what Marcus Smart brings. So I just think you try and do everything you can to avoid giving him up.
Yeah, and I'm sure they will, by the way. But
I don't think Marcus Smart.
You don't, yeah? Jackie?
I don't think Marcus Smart is going straight out with Aaron Gordon. I don't think in the end that's what they'll do. I think they'll try use a draft pick, maybe two first-round picks if they have to, but I think they prefer a first-round pick and a young player, maybe like Aaron Nesmith or something like that.
I think you see, you know, obviously how important Gordon Hayward was to this team. Obviously, he wasn't the scorer he was in Utah with this team, but he was very important on both ends. But also at the same time, if you look at this roster, outside of Gordon Hayward, they still have a very solid roster. And Jackie, when you say restlessness, some of that lies on the coach. And you see over in Atlanta what Nate McMillan's been able to do with this Hawks team. You know, they're 8-1 since him taking over. Does some of this fall on the coach's shoulders? I know with Gordon Hayward over there, there were some rumblings in the locker room about favoritism and maybe Brad Stevens isn't the guy that's going to be holding guys accountable and really making sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing on the court. I like this team. I trust Danny Ainge and his moves. But at the same time, I think some of this lies on Brad Stevens. And, you know, sometimes a new voice in the locker room helps a lot.
Jackie, what's the pressure on Brad Stevens right now in Boston?
Yeah, I think when teams lose, everyone has to take responsibility. And of course, if your team isn't performing in the fourth quarter, some of that falls on the coach. This is the one thing I tell everybody about Brad Stevens, though. One of the criticisms has been, well, he doesn't get in their faces. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't show emotion. And I can tell you from talking to these players, what you see out on the court, what you see on your television broadcast is not necessarily what's happening. There are times when guys come off the court and he's under his breath saying, you know, you really messed that up. We're going to, you know, so to say that Brad Stevens isn't trying to motivate them, that isn't holding them accountable, I don't really think that's entirely accurate. I'm not sure that, in my mind anyway, Brad Stevens isn't your biggest problem. Your biggest problem is you need wing defenders, you need better shooters, you need help for these two young guys who are playing too many minutes now with Jaylen Brown, by the way, with a knee that is a little cranky from time to time.
It's going to be fascinating to see what they do in the next 24 hours. And I want to move on to one of the other most talked about trade targets, Kyle Lowry. The Raptors still in the playoff race, but man, looks like a rebuild is coming. And you can see why, right? They've relocated to Tampa this season. Even though they're 2 years removed from winning a title, with all of the issues they've had with COVID, the absences on the team, they're not even playing in front of their own fans, so there isn't that pressure to keep guys who might be on expiring contracts. And Kyle Lowry is on an expiring contract. Norm Powell has a player option, so he is de facto on an expiring contract. And Kyle is turning 35 tomorrow. On the trade deadline, he's in the last year of his deal, as I said. So, Jackie, what do you think is going to happen there in terms of the best fit for him? Because we know there's a lot of teams interested.
Well, the Heat and the Sixers, I think, are the leaders in the clubhouse for that. And I think it makes sense for both of those teams. As you know, you can't, he's going to have his bird rights. You have to wait till the summer if you want to extend him. But from what I've been told, he wants some assurances from whichever team he goes to that there will be an extension coming. They can't do it right away. And I think the Toronto Raptors, if they do indeed trade Kyle Lowry, will honor that. It's just interesting. If you look back now from 2 years ago from that championship, Kawhi Leonard's gone. Danny Green is gone. You lost Gasol. You lost Ibaka. And that's a huge chunk of championship DNA. And to lose Kyle Lowry on top of that, wow, that is a huge rebuild. And we haven't even talked about the fact that Masai Ujiri hasn't signed an extension yet. He might not even be around. What a blow for a franchise that just shocked the world not that long ago, really.
Well, when you shock the world, though, it's kind of you're shocking the world because all of the things fell in line. I think even, you know, obviously once Kawhi left, you immediately put yourself in that position where, okay, well, Kyle Lauer's 33, you know, Marc Gasol is 32. So you start looking at your roster and it's like, okay, well, we're not going to be able to ride this out for three to five years if Kawhi had left. So the minute he left, it puts you in a rebuild. Then they overachieved capacity. Pascal Siakam played great last year, was an all-star, all of these positive things. You're like, hey, maybe we won't have to rebuild. But ultimately, they just couldn't sustain it. So I think they're doing the right thing. If you care about the franchise, you've got to get assets for some of your aging superstars and then allow them to rebuild and then start over. If you built it once, you can build it again.
Yeah, this is the business of basketball, you know, and unfortunately this is how it goes down. Obviously, Kyle Lowry, some can argue, is the best Toronto Raptor in the history of their franchise. Mm-hmm. And to lose something with someone like that, I'm sure that's not something they want to do. But like Richard said, if it's for the greater good of the franchise, but not only for the greater good of the franchise, it's also giving Kyle a chance to be in another winning position before his time is up. You know, 35-year-old point guards, you know, CP is an exception. There's not too many guys at that age that are still really doing stuff on the court. Kyle Lowry is someone who's doing that, so I definitely look to see if he's able to go to a Philly or a Miami, or if the Clippers can pull off something crazy and grab him. I think you put him in a position to try to win on his way out.
And that is the question, right? He's 35. As you mentioned, Jackie, he is going to be looking for that extension. So part of the question for the teams in the hunt here are, how much do you give up for him at this trade deadline, and how much money of your cap are you going to commit to him this summer? Jackie, if you're Philadelphia, if you're Miami, how far are you willing to go knowing that, hey, he's probably not going to be the same player 2 years from now that he is now, but now he could be the ingredient that pushes you over the edge. He absolutely could for some of these teams.
Well, that's why I think Philly, Rachel, is a leader in the clubhouse, because it's been a long time since the Philadelphia 76ers have won a championship, and you have two cornerstones in place. And the price for you, you have some young assets that you can send back. You can send back Maxey, Tybal, some of players like that that have great value, and you might have to throw in a pick. If I'm the Sixers, I'm doing it. I don't think money is a big issue with this ownership. At least it doesn't appear that way to me.
Yeah, and look, if you do trade Kyle Lowry to Philadelphia, if you're Masai Ujiri, that is a story you can sell your fans, right? Kyle going home to Philadelphia. It's sort of a nicer exit for him, for the fans of Toronto Raptors, than maybe going somewhere else. We'll have to see
or it could be his
how
exit
important
too.
That is. Yeah. Absolutely. We'll have to see how this shakes out. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to The Jump. We're going to get back to talking basketball in a moment, but right now we do want to share our platform with two NBA head coaches who used theirs yesterday to address the two mass shooting that occurred in just the last 6 days in this country. On Monday in Boulder, Colorado, a gunman using an AR-15 style gun that he did purchase legally and according to that state's gun laws just 6 days before killed 10 people inside a grocery store. Warriors coach Steve Kerr, who lost his father at the hands of a gunman while Steve was in college, delivered his press conference in front of a display with the names of the 10 victims in Boulder, as well as the 8 victims in Atlanta who last week were also murdered in their case by a gunman wielding an assault weapon he purchased over the counter the same day he went on his shooting spree. Here's Steve.
The thought of the mothers and fathers and sisters, brothers, daughters, and sons who are grieving right now with the loss of the people behind me is just devastating, particularly in the wake of what is just a common occurrence in our country and in an inability of our representatives in government of doing anything about it. We can't just sit here and accept that we're going to allow our fellow citizens to just mow each other down with weapons of war. It's the most disgusting thing that exists within our country. It's ridiculous. It's disgusting. It's devastating. There's so many people out there who are suffering. We have to do something about it. Our Senate has to do something about it.
You hear the emotion there in Steve's voice and what he said at the beginning of his comments there about these are people with families and lives. Again, he was 19 years old at college in Arizona when he got the phone call that his father was gunned down in cold blood. So he knows of what he speaks. Denver Nuggets coach Michael Malone also knows of what he speaks. This is not the first time that he's had to address this kind of issue going on in the state where his team played. This is what he had to say yesterday.
But our thoughts and prayers are definitely with the Boulder community and all the families of the 10 innocent people who were murdered yesterday. Ricky Olds, Denny Strong, Nevin Stanisic, Trelona Bartkowiak, Suzanne Fountain, Terry Liker, Kevin Mahoney, Lynn Murray, Jody Waters, and police officer Eric Talley, who father of 7 kids. So we keep all of them in our thoughts and prayers. We get judged on wins and losses, but if you take a step back and you put yourself in one of those families, what do you feel? This is a game. It's a game I love, I have a passion for, but I think about Eric Talley and his 7 kids. That's what I think about. I'm just heartbroken for them and everybody else. And hopefully we as a country, we as a state, can find a way to be better.
Really moving, really important. Richard, you played for Michael Malone in Denver. You are longtime friends with Steve Kerr. What do their words mean to you?
Well, you know, me personally, they mean a ton. You know, my father was gunned down in L.A. just 2 years ago. L.A. Sheriff still had not found, you know, the killers. And that was just another a random act of violence. And, you know, as much, you know, seven kids. And, you know, I look at, you know, my dad's, you know, two grandkids. And you look at all of these different things that happen. And it's, you know, you want answers and you understand the emotional impact. You understand that this is in a community where Mike Malone lives and his kids. You understand that Steve Kerr and what happened to him. And it is frustrating when, you know, I understand the rules and the laws in this country, and but I also understand that there is a thing that needs to be changed and need to be addressed. You know, people are purchasing guns completely legally and then going and doing this, but then everyone just has this, oh, well, you know, they followed the rules, so they're allowed to go do this. Weapons of war should not be on the street. That's just, you know, when our forefathers said this, there was no fire station. There was no police station. You were on your land and you had to protect from, you know, robbers and people that were, you know, trying to rob your family. And that was it. There was no one to call. And so I understand people should have the ability to have firearms, but weapons of war, they need to be more restrictive. That's just my personal opinion from my experience.
Yeah, first and foremost, obviously condolences to the families in Colorado and Atlanta. We live in a crazy time, you know, with the pandemic taking nearly over half a million people, law enforcement continuing to gun down unarmed minorities, mass shootings. But what's more alarming to me about this whole situation is it's easier to buy a gun and go kill people than it is to allow people to vote now. You see the new laws they're trying to get across the country where they're, you know, no same day voting, no this voting, no that voting. So you're trying to tell me I can go buy a gun and kill as many people as I want, and that's legal, but now you're trying
to tell
me.
Well, the killing is illegal, but
no, excuse me, buying the gun, purchasing the gun is legal, but then you're trying to, you're gonna make it harder for me to vote. That's just, to me, it's ass backwards, and it's something needs to be done.
That the risk of voter fraud is so significant in some lawmakers' minds, they have to have a bunch of rules about it, but the risk of going out and using that weapon that was legally purchased.
But there's no voter fraud.
Way.
I mean, someone
Well,
lost.
No, but that's my point.
That's what they're trying to hit you with, that fear.
Right.
So
that
you
fear.
Should be fear of voter fraud, but you should not be fear
Come on.
This.
And that's why I say it's backwards.
Which is really difficult. And look, it's not like we don't have test cases, right? Every other country in the world, or at least all of the ones we like to think of ourselves on par with, we can look at laws that they have and how they have affected the populations and the killings there. I was really moved by the way both of those coaches spoke and the fact that they chose to use their time to do that. Michael Malone, as I said at the beginning of this, not the first time he's addressed this. There was a shooting at a high school, I believe it was just last year, I think it was maybe during the bubble, where he wasn't at the high school his kids go to, but it was nearby and his kids had to be on lockdown. And anyone who has children in this country right now knows that their young children have to learn how to hide in a closet or under a desk. It's really hard. All right, Jump, we'll be right back. It's crunch time right here on The Jump. James Wiseman back in the starting lineup last night, and Steve Kerr said he anticipates the rookie to start for the rest of the season. Matt, how do you expect James to take advantage of this opportunity?
I love this. You know, the best way to learn is being thrown in the fire. If they're able to make the playoffs, obviously they're not going to really make a run, but I think experience is the best teacher, so he'll be well suited for this moving forward when they get their full roster back next season.
Yeah, and I love it. It's okay to have this happen in a progression. You look at LaMelo Ball. He didn't start the first, you know, third of this season. Like, he earned it. They had a roster. So it's okay to allow guys to grow into these roles. So I think Steve's doing the right thing by starting him the rest of the way.
Matt, I'm adding the addendum. The best way to learn is to get thrown into the fire with Draymond Green barking in your ear. Because you know he is helping that kid.
He can help put the fire out.
Season. Yeah. Atlanta, let's move on to there because they're 8-1 since Nate McMillan took over as head coach. 14-20 undefeated. Pierce, the Hawks play the Kings tonight. Richard, what is the biggest reason for this turnaround? Is this the coach?
Yeah, it's some coach, and some of it, their schedule's been crap. Like, they haven't played any great team, and I think they played the Miami Heat, and they didn't have Jimmy Butler. That is no disrespect. Winning those games is impressive. It's okay.
I'm allergic to you.
Yeah, it happens to everybody. So are my kids. But my point is this. They are winning, and they're doing the things that they're supposed to. They're beating the team that they're supposed to, finally.
New voice in the locker room. You know, this team did well in free agency last year. Coming into the season, I think they underachieved. And, you know, kind of the same thing I said in Boston. Sometimes a change of voice is, I might have offended Jackie, I apologize, but sometimes a change of voice is what you need. And you see Nate McMillan, with his experience as a player and a winning coach, has definitely been, you know, a key to this team's revival.
Well, look, I didn't totally understand Nate McMillan's dismissal in Indiana. That just did not make sense to me. So I'm very happy to see him get this opportunity here, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Absolutely. Let's talk.
Wow, Nate McMillan can coach. Surprise.
Surprise.
Let's talk a little bit about Tobias Harris stepping up his game, especially with Joel Embiid out. Harris had 25-13 last night in the win over the Warriors. He was, of course, left off the All-Star roster and has had a bit to say about it. Is he making his case, Richard?
You got to make the case. That's the only way is, as coaches, if you go out there and light up these coaches. Remember when Bradley Beal, when he didn't make, then all of a sudden, they're like, I'm going to vote this dude in because I don't want him going for 30 pieces every night the next time I see him.
To me, he's the key to their team moving forward in the playoffs. We need a healthy Joel Embiid to be the best team, but for them to go far in the playoffs, it's going to ride on Tobias Harris' shoulders, and well, I think he's up to it.
Look, and he takes up max money on the roster, so he's got to be that kind of contributor, right? Guys, the trade deadline is tomorrow. We will be back for a 2-hour special show.